I am going to be the first speaker. My name is Annette Wislacki. I'm from the University of Tennessee, and I'm talking about a project that's a collaboration between the University of Kentucky, the University of Georgia, and Tennessee. And we're going to be talking about cover crops undercover, evaluating ecosystem services of cover crops in year-round high tunnel production systems. And it's almost embarrassing to present this to an ASHS audience once you see our results and what bad shape our high tunnels are in as far as the soil goes, but it just shows that we do need to be thinking more about cover crops and tunnels. So as you all know, high tunnels are basically intensively cropped irrigated deserts, and we keep seeing the number of high tunnels increase across the U.S. due in part to the NRCS EQIP program that's getting people these tunnels, and because of the year-round production where people can get that year-round cash. However, the temperatures in these tunnels are generally going to be warmer, but we see more variability throughout the day, so bigger swings between the day and the night temperatures. We don't get those leaching rains that we do in the field, so we see the salts and the nutrients remain in the soil and tend to creep up over time. We know that irrigation is going to be required not only for the crop production, but also for its decomposition. Otherwise, it's just going to remain in place instead of breaking down into the soil. That warmer environment increases soil organic matter breakdown and nutrient mineralization. In an area in the south where we already have very rapid organic matter breakdown, so that's exacerbated in the tunnels. And then we have those faster growth rates that can make the nutrient deficiencies worse, which you'll see throughout this presentation. So we all know about sustainable soil management. We talk about it a lot in the open field. This quote from Montri and Birnbaum, soil health is critical due to the premium value of space in the high tunnel. And we know the value of cover crops, that they're going to provide that nitrogen and other nutrients. They're also going to feed that soil food web with fresh versus decomposed organic matter. And they're going to help us capture those nutrients while leaching out the salts. So why not cover crop in tunnels? Well, again, it's that high value real estate. And time equals money, so it's hard to fit those cover crops in around our high-value crops. And we also have to learn how to grow those cover crops in this system because it is a brand new experience, just like growing the cash crops is. So we need to have the irrigation in place. We need to think about the decomposition, which is going to take longer without that overhead moisture, and the other complexities that are involved with growing that cover crop inside the tunnel. But how can we make these cover crops work in a tunnel system? We need to identify those niches in the system, and then we have to think about those adaptive management practices as well. So our study, the objective was to evaluate the ecosystem services of cool season cover crops on tomato production systems. We had two sites in the Upland South, one in Knoxville at the Organic Crops Unit, and one in Lexington at their horticultural research farm. And then we had four fall winter treatments. One was a winter wheat cover crop at 125 pounds per acre. Another was crimson clover at 30 pounds per acre. And then we did a wheat and clover mix with 15 pounds per acre of clover and 60 pounds per acre of wheat. And then we did a continuous cash crop for comparison. And we used lettuce because that's the most common rotation that we see in our area, is tomatoes and lettuce for winter. So our plots were 30 feet long by 3 feet wide beds. We had six reps across three tunnels. And our cover crops were sown and lettuce was planted in October of 2016 and 2017. The cover crops were mowed early in March of 2017-2018 and then tilled in 5 days after mowing. We let it decompose for about 2 weeks, and then we spread NatureSafe 855 fertilizer and tilled it in. And we based that amount of fertilizer for each plot on nitrogen credit from the cover crop biomass. So, for example, in our clover plots, we added less fertilizer for a total of 112 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and we use this cover crop calculator to determine the nitrogen from that biomass from the University of Idaho. Then we planted 8-week-old early girl tomatoes in all the treatment beds in late March in 2017 and 2018, and we had 14 plants per plot. We collected a lot of data out of this trial. One thing we collected was the cover crop biomass, so we had 2 quarter meter squared samples per bed. We clipped those at the soil surface, sorted into the cover crops and the weeds, dried them at 65 degrees until we had consistent mass. And then we also looked at tomato yield. So we harvested the tomatoes at a minimum of the breaker stage weekly for 10 plants in that plot for 7 weeks in 2017 and 4 weeks in 2018. And then the marketable fruit were sorted using the Florida grading standard sizes. And then the unmarketable fruit were sorted by the primary cause of unmarketability, and both marketable and unmarketable fruit were both counted and weighed by category. For soil sampling, we did this on a semi-annual basis at the transition between the cool and the warm season treatments. We took 3 cores per plot at 0 to 15 centimeters and 15 to 30 centimeter depths, and then we bulked these cores for single analysis per depth per plot. And the soils were air dried and submitted to the University of Kentucky Soil Testing Lab for analyses of pH, buffer pH, pK, calcium, magnesium, zinc, total percent nitrogen, total percent carbon, soluble salts, permanganate, oxidizable, exchangeable carbon, and potentially mineralizable nitrogen. So here we have our cover crop and weed biomass data, and you'll see the biomass here on the left. And then you'll see Kentucky at the top for 2017 on the left and 2018 on the right, and Tennessee at the bottom. And first, you'll notice that the weed biomass in Kentucky was much greater than it was in Tennessee. That's the tannish yellow bar at the top there. So they had much more weed pressure than we did in Tennessee. But then you'll notice that they had similar crimson clover growth as we did in 2017. But less crimson clover growth in 2018. And we believe this is due to the colder winter they experienced in 2018 that didn't allow that crimson clover to grow as well. And then our winter wheat, they had better winter wheat growth than we did in 2017 and fairly similar in 2018. But we had a much smaller percentage of weeds overall. In 2017 in Tennessee in particular, we noticed a visual difference in plant growth between our treatments. So we did some subjective plant health ratings, and a 1 on the scale was the least healthy plant and a 10 was the most healthy plant. And you can see here that the clover beds were significantly healthier looking than the wheat plots, and you can see them there on the right. However, this didn't translate into a difference in yield in 2017. And here we have Kentucky in blue and Tennessee in the orange. And you'll notice there's no significant differences in marketable or total yield in either year, except for total yield for Tennessee in 2017, where we did see that all treatments were significantly higher than the wheat treatment. So all other treatments were significantly higher. And that's likely due to that wheat binding up some of the nutrients that weren't available to the tomatoes. However, even though we saw differences in total yield, by the time we graded out for marketable yield, there were no significant differences. The other thing you'll notice, if you look, compare between the marketable and total yields, where our marketable yields were fairly pitiful in both years, and they got worse in 2018 in both locations. So by 2018, the marketable yields in Tennessee were about 20% of the total yield in some cases. So very drastic. And most of that was due to yellow shoulder disorder, which is fairly common for our area. And it's poorly understood, but the causal factors are thought to be the environment, greater than 90 degrees, and that definitely qualifies in our high tunnels, and it was a hotter year in 2018 than 2017. And then the nutrition, the soil characteristics, the cultivar, and some believe it's also related to virus as well. And we'll talk more about this in a little bit. We'll come back to it after we talk about our soil results. So the effects on the soil properties in Kentucky, we didn't see a treatment effect in Kentucky, but we did see an effect by depth for all of the characteristics. So between that 0 and 15 centimeter fraction and the 15 and 30 centimeter fraction, we also saw significant differences by year in Kentucky. And then we saw some differences in date by depth for phosphorus and for the zinc, total percent nitrogen, soluble salts, and total percent carbon. And we also saw an effect on treatment by date for the exchangeable carbon. So that potassium that we saw a significant difference in, you'll notice that over the 3 years of the study, the potassium levels were declining in the soil. And the soluble salts also tended to decline, which means we might have started to see a difference with those cover crops by 2018, helping with the salts. And the exchangeable carbon, we tended to see it bounce around a little bit. It was the highest in the spring, and then it decreased in the fall, as you'd expect, since we were tilling in that cover crop in the spring. For Tennessee, we saw the same sort of trends for depth and date as we did in Kentucky, and also those date by depth interactions for the phosphorus and the pH and the calcium, magnesium, zinc, soluble salts, and the percent carbon. But we also saw treatment effects for the phosphorus and the pH and the total soluble salts. So for phosphorus, you can see the differences in our continuous crop of lettuce actually had the highest levels of phosphorus, with the grass cover and the cover crop and the legume cover having the lowest phosphorus, and the grass and legume mix was in between those two. And then for our pH, we had a very, very low pH in these tunnels, and we tended to see that the grass cover crop had the highest pH, and the legume cover crop was lower, and the continuous crop also was high up there. And then for our soluble salts, we did see some differences. The legume cover crop tended to have higher levels of soluble salts than the other treatments. So going back to that yellow shoulder disorder, David Francis from Ohio State has done a lot of work on yellow shoulder disorder and risk factors. And this is profiles for soils at risk for yellow shoulder disorder. And granted, this is information from the Great Lakes and Mid-Atlantic, which Kentucky is considered a Mid-Atlantic state. We're a little too far south for that, but this is what we have to go on. So you'll see the low risk factors in the first column, the high risk on the second column. And for Kentucky, they had adequate extractable potassium, but you can see in Tennessee, we were very low. Our Hartz ratios were also low in both states, and that's the ratio of the potassium to the square root of magnesium, known to be used for yellow shoulder disorder predictions. Also, our calcium-magnesium ratio, again, it was high enough in Kentucky, but low in Tennessee. So all of our variables in Tennessee were stacked against in favor of yellow shoulder disorder. Our pH, again, Kentucky's within a decent range there with 6.5. Tennessee, we're very low, even though high pH is known as a risk factor. We all know that 5.6 is too low for growing most vegetables. And then our organic matter was also low. So, explains all of our yellow shoulder disorder that we saw, especially in 2018. In summary, this was a 2-year project, and the positive effects of cover crops can take several years to become apparent. The legume or legume grass biculture may be the best choice for early cash crop planting. The clover plots had yields comparable to the lettuce plots with less fertilizer costs, so you'd have to weigh your market in the winter and if you have that market for the lettuce to make up for it. The wheat was the best at out-competing the weeds but may have tied up the nitrogen during the tomato growing season. So another thing to keep in mind, and that yellow shoulder disorder that got worse over time. So thank you. This was work that was from a Southern SARE project, and I think I have time for one quick question. Yes.
Did you roll the size up on the hypos in the, like, as the season
in Kentucky and Tennessee, we have the sides rolled up basically the entire season.